So was there a moment in your relationship with this congregation when they turned into we? I probably spent about 8 hours in the last 2 weeks in both formal and informal conversations with Reverend Alexa Fraser, telling her about you and about us. Even after all that talking about us, I'm actually not clear if that change in me from me and you to us happened at a particular moment this year. I thought first, of course, about Clarice's memorial service as a time that was obviously important for all of us, but was important for me to feel like I was part of us. And then I thought about a moment a few weeks after that when my wife was preparing her service for being your guest minister, and she was asking me all these questions about the order of service and why do they do things that way? And I responded with authority that we like it that way and she should try it. But maybe the mysterious moment that transformed they into we happened for me really on Christmas Eve when my daughter, Sarah, was here from Atlanta and my whole family could be here together and be part of that evening. Back when Sarah was a little girl and I was serving in Charlottesville, Christmas Eve always had this one father-daughter ritual. She would leave the Christmas Eve dinner early with me and go to church and help me put 180 paper drip guards around the candles for the Christmas Eve service. And of course, we didn't have to do that this year because our worship associates are so efficient. But we remembered that together. Sharing this congregation with her and with Kathleen turned they into we. So maybe there are those moments for you when you notice that for the first time. But, you know, I think even in this testimony, I realize that it happens slowly over time because we build a storehouse of memories together. And those memories of a lot of little details that we're involved in doing together, the everyday life of a congregation, changes us and brings us into a blended relationship of family within the congregation. And I know that that's going to happen with Reverend Alexa next year, and I'm glad that she has a much bigger head start than I had in making those mysterious moments possible. I appreciate all the support that so many of you have already shown her, reaching out to her, connecting with her when she's been here, even though her formal ministry won't start until August. And I want you to know how much support she has in the network of interim ministers that I've relied on, and also all the great colleagues that she's already well connected with, having lived here in the Washington area for some time. The conversations we've had together have made me reflect on what a difference there is between when I started in ministry 40-some years ago, in the prehistoric days before there was an internet, and how you would get support. You know, back then you might have two or three trusted colleagues, friends, or senior ministers who you could count on if you had a problem or a question, and you could make a phone call and arrange an appointment, have an in-person discussion maybe if you were the person was close by. It might take a week to have that time to get an answer to your question. Today you go to the UU Ministers Association Colleagues Facebook group and you can ask about virtually anything and everything, and within a few hours you're likely to get dozens of responses from all over the continent. Last weekend in the sermon we were talking about how it's not only the devil that is in the details of church life, but the angels as well. And that's certainly true for the questions that ministers ask about. Some of the variety of devilish questions I have noticed on the minister's Facebook page in recent months had also some great angelic answers, but I thought you'd be curious about what ministers ask themselves about. Do you publicly recognize everybody who helps on a Sunday? By what methods or media? Has anyone renewed your welcoming congregation status after it's been, you know, 10 years since you actually did that? How did that go? How do you talk to a member who's recently suffered a stroke about your concern about how that person manages volunteer roles? Are you singing those new words, answering the call of love? We did it at Easter for the first time. My folks loved them. Are mail-in ballots for congregational meetings a good idea? Do you advertise in the Yellow Pages? One minister wrote back, "What are the Yellow Pages?" And then the perennial and all-time favorite question that ministers ask each other, "Help! It's Saturday night, and I need..." You name it. Time for all ages, a reading, a listening ear, someone to tell me my sermon doesn't suck as badly as I think that it does. So, UUMA colleagues, is that kind of confidential space where you can ask about virtually everything. The ministers that you will be working with in your future, not just next year, but in the long term, care for each other and they support each other. And the new generation of ministers that's coming along have been challenged maybe more than any other by the kinds of experiences we've been having in our society, in our own spiritual discernment, in our congregational life, to be willing to ask questions about things we never thought we'd have to question. My hope for this congregation is that you will continue to be the kind of space in the lives of your members, a space where people can ask and get answers about things that they're really, that's really important for them to ask and wonder about, and that they've been afraid to ask in other places. Questions especially about what it means to live a faithful life of meaning and purpose. Questions that we will need to ask and answer within all of our congregations in the years ahead include ones that I'd never considered in as short a time frame as 10 years ago. And they're questions that make me uncomfortable and that I don't necessarily have any easy answers for. How does the history of this role of minister connect to the history in Western society of white supremacy? How does the way we understand our church decision-making processes and polity reflect cultural styles and assumptions that may be normative in Western cultures but aren't really experienced the same way or experienced as useful in other cultures? Can we sustain a Unitarian Universalism that continues to work for justice in a polarized and partisan society and not only live on one side of that divide? What does it mean to have a preponderance of actively serving ministers in our denomination shift to being majority female over this past decade? What does the discounting of women's leadership that remains a part of the culture of power in this country mean for the role of the liberal church in the future? What if millennials and Generation X people just aren't as interested in supporting brick-and-mortar institutions over the next 30 years, but find community and commitment in other contexts? These are questions that invite us into a different level of reflection about congregational life beyond should we advertise in the Yellow Pages. Our challenge is to keep asking questions about the best practices in our congregational life around the daily routine details that we have to keep up with each week, and at the same time keep before us the biggest, the most important questions that we can think of that speak to our meaning and purpose together. I try to talk to new members coming into congregations about those kinds of questions. I ask people what they want the church to do and be for them and in the world, and not just get them into conversation about what they can do for us, what committee they want to be on. People will say they want the church to be a caring community for them. They want it to be a place where they can grow spiritually, a place of inspiration, where personal faith is translated into action towards a world of justice and equity. Occasionally, there are new members who come in who will, in one way or another, say something that makes me very happy. And it's phrased sometimes this way. Well, I came here because I actually feel pretty good about myself and about who I am. And I think that I have something to give to this community. I think I can be a contributing part. Usually somebody who responds like that is expecting that what they have to give is a skill, a resource, a personal presence, all of which is very much needed in our congregations. It's more rare when people become members that they consider the possibility that they are being asked to give in a different way, and that is to give up. In these times, we are being asked to give up some assumptions about the way the world is. Some of us are being asked to give up certain kinds of privileges that we have taken for granted. Some of us are being asked to give up a sense of entitlement to being treated with an automatic deference because of our race, age, color, gender, you name it. We are being asked to give up a certain kind of pride about who we are as Unitarian Universalists in favor of a humility that could help make us what we want to become. One time I was working on a worship service for the congregation that I served in Cleveland, and I decided to ask the congregation about virtually everything in a different way. I tried to do an advance of head of the sermon engagement, and I posed three questions in the newsletter in advance of the sermon, and I asked people to give their answers in six words or less. And the three questions were pretty simple. What is the meaning and purpose of human existence? What is the most important mission of this congregation? And what is the most important reason you come here? I got 160 people who responded to my requests. 99% of them took up the challenge and gave me their candid and often deepest answers. Not all of those did it in six words. And no two responses were really identical, although there were certainly some patterns. I laughed hard when I came to two sheets that were together in the pile of responses. One of them said, "The most important reason I come to church is to please my husband." Not far away from it was one that said, "I come because my wife wants me to accompany her." And I couldn't help think that those two people were married to each other. The majority of the answers that people gave were very personal and inward directed. And you can guess, the finding support for my personal journey was a common one. People made reference to the worship services. The words connection, reflection, inspiration were all part of a word cloud that we created and that we projected on a screen in the sanctuary. And when it came to the question of the mission of the church, people had a similar range of responses, but a lot of people said that the mission of the church was to support individual spiritual journeys and exploration. And I was surprised, actually, by how many people used words like safe, refuge, sanctuary. And you read all of these, and you come away feeling that it must be experienced as a pretty hostile world out there for people who think the way that we do about religion. And the fact that a congregation like this exists, where you can feel safe and held in expressing not only your strongly held opinions, but the things you have doubts about or that you're not sure about, is a pretty important thing for us. But I actually found very few people that used the one word that had jumped out for me when I answered these questions in advance myself. And when I walked into this building and I saw that word on your wall in your mission, I was quite touched and thrilled that your mission says that you want to seek, love, and serve boldly. Well, I thought about all those words when I was doing my six-word answers, seek, love, and serve. But the one that I really came back to, and that when I thought about it, that I could use as the answer to every one of those three questions, was the word serve. What is the meaning and purpose of our existence on this planet? Serve. What is the most important mission of this congregation? Service. What is the most important reason you might come here? Consider whether it could be service. I am looking forward so much to hearing about the year that you have ahead of you, completing this time of transition to the new minister that you will have, and to the many years beyond with that person. I know that during this time together, we did not question everything about how this congregation does things, because actually you do most things really well. And as your search committee surveys you this coming fall and asks you to describe yourselves and the ministry that you want to do in the future, I hope that you take nothing that you do well for granted. I hope that you will consider questioning the details about how you could do it better, and that you will also ask the big questions that the world is demanding that we ask ourselves, all wrapped up in the question of who is we? Who can we be? My aspiration for the future that you have together is expressed well by the words of a beloved teacher and UU colleague of mine, the late Reverend Gordon McKeeman. Gordon was part of the congregation that I served in Charlottesville, where he retired after a long ministry in Akron, Ohio, and as president of Starkey School. And his defining words about what ministry means show us how a shared ministry can move people from I to we, from they to us. They are fairly well known. I think we could say they've become a cherished part of our homegrown UU scripture. So I want to hold them up as I close this sermon as a light both on your present and your future. Gordon wrote that ministry is a quality of relationship between and among human beings that beckons forth hidden possibilities. It is inviting people into deeper, more constant, more reverent relationship with the world and with one another. Ministry is carrying forward a long history of hope and liberation that has dignified and informed this human venture over many centuries. It is being present with others in their terrors and torments, in their grief and their pain, knowing that those feelings are our feelings too. Ministry is celebrating the triumphs of the human spirit, the miracles of birth and life, and the wonders of devotion and sacrifice. It is witnessing to life-enhancing values, speaking truth to power, standing for human dignity and equity, for compassion and aspiration. Ministry is believing in life in the presence of death, struggling for human responsibility against principalities and powers and institutions and structures that ignore humaneness and become instruments of death. It is all these and much more than all of them that is present in what is wordless, unspoken, and ineffable. It is speaking the highest and living the highest that we know, and living with the knowledge that it's never going to be as deep or as wide or as high as we would wish. Whenever there is a meeting that summons us to our better selves, wherever our lostness is found, our fragments are reunited, our wounds begin healing, our spines straighten, and our muscles grow strong for the task, there is ministry. And here in Sterling, there is ministry. It's been a joy to have it be part of my ministry. It always was your ministry. Nothing that is human is foreign to your ministry. No authentic spiritual insight or practice is discouraged. No injustice is beyond your challenge. No assumptions are beyond question. Keep asking about everything. May it be so.